There is a hole in the world like a great black pit, and the vermin of the world inhabit it, and its morals aren't worth what a pig could spit. And it goes by the name of the Edinburgh Fringe. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. The weekend awaits at Edinburgh. The Fringe is here, the arts capital of the world. The takeover of the capital city of Scotland is almost complete. But in a week or so's time, we will drive it back out again for 11 months. So if you're in the city, enjoy the arts. If you're not, I shall give you a little flavour of it all in the podcast. Yeah, it's myself, Ewan Spence, here once more from the streets of Edinburgh, bringing you just a little flavour of some of the 3,500 shows that are heading, have headed, or will head, or will be heading, or have already left, because not everybody stays for the full 3 weeks. Always check your listings for details. It is a big weekend coming up. It's not the final weekend, but this is the one where it's a chance to really put down the flag, establish your show as one of the big buzzes of the Fringe this year. Get that flag, raise it up for the coming week. But whatever you do, just keep on flyering the show, because it's all about getting people in the door and getting the tickets on the seats. Or is it? Sometimes it's just about making sure that people remember you at the Fringe. I always remember many, many years ago that the biggest poster space in Edinburgh was bought by Tim Vine, with a big, massive Tim Vine poster, and in very, very small, almost like 24-point font right at the bottom. You had to go right up to the poster. It read, it just read, "Is not appearing at the Fringe," but still got noticed. Sam Campbell, kind of similar this week. He was the winner of the Edinburgh Comedy Awards last year, and in all the World of Comedy Awards, all you need to remember is that's the one that's the Perrier's. Hasn't been for a while, but that's the one that the Perrier's. And he's back at the Fringe this year. He was back at the Fringe this year. You've missed him by now. Bulletproof 10 was the show, and it was a big event. He is the award winner, but it wasn't a massive run. It wasn't building over the weeks. It wasn't putting a flag down, hoisting it up, and getting the flyering out just to keep everybody going. No. He booked the biggest venue possible, the Pleasance Grand, 750 seats. He booked it for 10 minutes. Not 10 minutes every day, just one 10-minute show, a packed house, his tight 10 set, the Bulletproof 10 of the title, and everyone left happy. Chortle even gave it a review, but it was on a pro-rata basis, so it's not 0.8333 stars for Sam Campbell's 2023 Fringe show, but several million stars for a rather cunning stunt, which may put him in line for another award next week. But more on Malcolm Hardy et al. As we head forward. Before then, let's go for today's interview. It's with Rebecca McGlynn. Her musical, Asexuality, asks what it means to be a man in the 21st century and how toxic masculinity affects those of us assigned male at birth. It's an autobiographical musical comedy about Rebecca's life before transitioning. Sitting down with Rebecca in a brief moment of sun, there was still some wind, but there we go, it's Scotland, we talk about the power of Sondheim and choosing to do a musical for a show about queer identity. It's also, why is it that life never fits into a nice three-act structure, wrapping it all up? This is an autobiographical piece, and as part of the interview, Rebecca does briefly talk about a historical sexual assault set around a 16-minute mark on the podcast. The show itself is on at the Gilded Balloon Powderhouse, takes place at 11 p.m. right through to the 27th. Rebecca McGlynn, Asexuality. Joining me now in one of the many nooks and crannies that us who've been at the Fringe show far too long know how to find and tend to introduce them to people from LA who just go, my God, it's like Labyrinth.
Yes, it's, you know, I'm getting a real workout in Edinburgh, you know.
Rebecca McGlynn joins me now. Welcome to our city. Nothing horizontal, all vertical.
Yeah, it's interesting. In LA, I just drive everywhere, so I'm realizing how out of shape I am. Not only doing a show every night, but also just walking up these stairs is...
Yeah, we don't have any stairs that go down in Everett. They're all up. All the hills are up.
Yeah, it's definitely a challenge. But I brought hiking boots specifically for this because I know that Scotland is a hilly place. I've heard that before, so...
Did we live up to your expectations?
You surpassed them.
Have you tried climbing the dormant volcano just to the east?
I have not.
Arthur, see, that you can just see there. It's a dormant volcano, just through the trees there.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I did not know about that, but yeah. I will have to...
Yeah. It's less steep round the other side. Go round it first, then climb up. Trying to climb it up this side, no. Just don't. I mean, the view is lovely both ways. Anyway, Rebecca Moyan joins us. You have a show at The Fringe. You better tell us about it before I am unable to claim this podcast on tax expenses.
I am performing Asexuality, the solo musical. It is a one-woman musical comedy about my life. It's mostly about my life before I transitioned, when I was identifying as an asexual man. And sort of about how toxic masculinity affects men as much as women, but I think in a very different way, given like the societal expectations that are put on us. And we are just kind of encouraged to suppress those emotions, any emotions really. You know, so I think that's definitely a struggle that men or people assigned male at birth go through. And, you know, so that was a struggle with my asexuality and obviously also my journey into learning that I was a transgender woman. So that is sort of the, it's all in there. It's all in, my story, in the musical there. So yeah.
Given that, you must have had a... Am I trying to say now society has a different viewpoint of yourself at different points in your life, or you have a different viewpoint of society at various points in your life?
Yeah.
Choose the question for me.
So actually, one of the characters in my show, I have three inner voice characters, one of whom is John Q. Public, who is sort of my outlook on what society expects of me. And one of the things that I explored in this was, because he is very much the antagonist of it, but also he grows and changes, because I think that, you know, I mean, certainly, you know, trans issues and queer issues have become a lot more illuminated, you know, in the past 5 years even, which has been amazing. And, you know, as much as there is kind of all of this transphobia and backlash in society, I think that the fact that we're able to have these conversations is improving things and is making it easier for people to, you know, question their identities or, like, sort of discover themselves in whatever way that makes sense for them. So one of the things I wanted to do with this show was take that antagonist of John and give him, you know, give him an arc and have him evolve as a character, because I've seen so many solo shows where, you know, you have this sort of inner shame or something, and it's just this sort of monster that attacks you and tears you apart for, you know, no other reason than to just hurt you because it's fun. And I mean, one of the things that I've always loved about, you know, any fiction or anything is just a really well-defined villain. And it really got me thinking about, you know, what is John's motivation for, you know, telling me to, you know, oh, just pretend you're straight, just, you know, conform to what is expected of you as a man. And I sort of realized that he's protecting me. Like, he is a protector, and that's the only way that he knows how to do that. And once it becomes clear to him that nothing that he has done has actually really protected me in a real sense. He sort of re-examines his outlook on the queer issues that I'm going through in the show.
Why a musical?
Well, I love musicals.
Favorite musical of all time?
Sweeney Todd. Absolutely. I saw a production of it at the New York Opera, and it was just, I mean, it blew me away. I was probably 14. Like, I just, I mean, I grew up right outside of New York City, so it was really great. My mom would just take me to Broadway shows all the time. Like, she'd pull me out of school and say, no, we're gonna go see Fame or something. You know? Yeah, I have always been a musical kid. I was in my church choir. I had a very excellent choir director who just, she really cared about, you know, the quality of the youth choir and kind of, I mean, she gave me so much musical education. And we actually, my first time in the UK was in high school when we came and toured a bunch of like cathedrals and stuff. It was an amazing experience. And I've always also had sort of a technical mind about it, so I would try and like pick apart, okay, what is it that I like so much about this song or this measure of this song or whatever. So I've kind of had music, I don't know, coming at me from all different aspects of my life, and so I've always sort of had a fascination with musicals, and especially with, you know, Stephen Sondheim specifically, I think is such a master of storytelling through song. I've never had much patience for songs or musicals that have that sort of feeling of, oh, we're gonna stop the story and then sing a song and do a dance and then we're gonna get back to the story. And that's very frustrating to me. I'm just very interested in, no, the music should be helping tell the story. So and I love writing lyrics, and I think, you know, I think learning things through music is a sort of quick way. Like, I remember in sixth grade, I learned the quadratic formula to the tune of Pop Goes the Weasel, and I've never forgotten it. X is equal to negative B plus or minus the square root of B squared minus 4AC all over 2A. For those of you interested, one of the things is that my three inner voices only ever appear on video projection, which is really fun for me to be able to interact with them live on stage, and also sing four-part harmonies with myself. Is a lot of fun, and so because I also when I'm in Los Angeles, I work in film and television, sort of freelance as a cinematographer and editor, sound mixer, and so it was really fun for me to kind of bring all of those elements together for this show. And you know, and just, I don't know, it's, I mean, one of the things I love about this show is that it is everything I love about storytelling. And it's everything from the technical parts of like getting the lighting right and making sure that there's no green screen bleed through, you know, all of that, to just like really connecting emotionally with the material. Like, it's all related, and it's all connected, and it's all stuff that I love to do.
And was that easy enough to bring over to the Fringe when you've got that short get in, get out, a venue you've never seen?
Yeah, so it's a lot cheaper to bring things to Edinburgh when your entire cast fits on a USB drive. Yeah, honestly, one of the things that's nice about having a very kind of tech-heavy show, obviously, like, the tech rehearsals are a little bit crazy, but it does allow me to have kind of a minimal set and, you know, not that many props, because, you know, I'm relying on lighting cues and video cues to help me tell the story and help me set the scenes for the various backdrops of my life.
So you said that you love lyrics, you love musicals, but does loving lyrics make it an easy thing to write? What was the process like?
It's definitely, no, it was a lot harder to write. But I think it was worth it. And it's interesting writing. There's something about writing songs that made me re-examine a lot of the events in my life, since it's an autobiographical piece. The events from my life kind of took on more meaning or more interesting context. Like, one of the songs in my show is called A Better Parallel, where I am trying to explain to my best friend what asexuality is, and I'm doing it through the lens of TV and movies, because, you know, that's the pop culture that we know, and sort of realizing that, you know, I go through each one, I'm like, oh, it's like the 40-year-old virgin, although I'm not, because he finds out that he's, you know, he's actually wanted to have sex, and it's something that he's been looking forward to. And so I say, okay, scratch that. It's like I'm Dexter from Dexter, the TV show, who, although he kind of, he ends up like even cheating on his girlfriend with another girl, so it's okay. And so I cycle through all these things, and at the end of the song, I as a character realize what the exact same thing I as a writer realized while writing the song, which was, this is one of the problems, is that there, you know, we are very underrepresented in media. Like, asexuality, I think, is like really, it's misunderstood, and I think that, like, it's frustrating for me to not have, you know, a lot of it's frustrating for me to not to have media to take from and to see myself in, and I basically at the end of that song come to the conclusion that I have to write it myself, because I'm a writer, and, you know, and that's what people do, is you just, if you don't see yourself represented, you have to represent yourself, I think.
Now you have that context, and you've looked back at parts of your life to bring them into the show. What context do you have now that you didn't have previously?
The one that really stands out for me is, I was sexually assaulted in college by a woman when I was identifying as a man, and I didn't realize, I never categorized it as sexual assault in my mind. I was just like, oh yeah, that's just a, you know, that just happened. And I think it's that kind of thing, like, looking back now with the, I don't know, I mean, we're all wiser the older we get, but I think we just kind of, you know, really understanding that, and it honestly took writing this show to realize, oh, that was an assault, and, you know, it is, and it's, you know, I knew, like, oh yeah, it's possible for, you know, men to be victims of sexual assault by women and everything, but, you know, but it never connected with me on a personal level. It was just something like, oh yeah, no, I recognize that's possible, but that's not something that would ever have happened to me. And then I kind of realized through writing this, I was like, oh, that's an interesting new angle for my brain to focus on. Because I started writing a show in 2017, right when the Me Too movement kind of exploded. And, you know, and that's what kind of, like, put that in that context for me. And I realized, like, I think this is a really important show because, you know, that's a conversation that I think a lot of men are excluded from, even though, you know, I think the conversation is supposed to be about the, you know, about the aggressors and about the people in power who are, you know, taking advantage of it. But, you know, as what I thought that I was a male victim at that point in my life, like, that was, you know, I realized that there wasn't a space that men could really, like, safely and under the under societal, you know, guidelines, you know, talk openly about that kind of thing. So that's, that kind of like really inspired me to really start working on it. And then, I didn't realize I was trans until right after the pandemic happened. after which point I already had a full draft of my show written and everything. And I realized, okay, well, I can't really do a show about queer identity and not mention the fact that I'm trans. So I had to rework the ending a little bit, and the structure of the show is, it reflects that, because it is still mainly about my life as an ace man, but then there is this sort of weird ending where it kind of changes course, and, you know, and I think that that's just kind of, because sometimes that's how life is. It's not
always... Life can sometimes be messy.
Yeah, it's not always...
It's not always a Sondheim musical.
Yay! Yeah! Yeah, life isn't always... life doesn't always fit nicely into a three-act structure. but, you know, so I think that's, like, that's kind of why... And I there's something I like about that, and I realized that, you know, my whole... I mean, one of the writing styles that I've fallen in love with through writing this show is just, you know, setting up an expectation and then it kind of falls apart. And, you know, and that is also like, you know, I mean, that's the structure of several of the jokes in the show, but also it's the structure of the entire show as a whole, which I think is really cool.
So the show itself, where can people see it?
The show is at 11 p.m. at the Gilded Balloon Patter House in the Nip. And I hope that people come and celebrate with me.
Okay, right. You've not done much Scottish language, have you?
No, I haven't.
Because telling everybody that your show is in the Nip might lead to a very interesting audience.
It's in the name. It's asexuality. I don't know what people expect from me. You know...
In the Nip generally refers to being naked.
Oh, well...
Which might be a different kind of show.
I think Gilded Balloon has put me in that... That seems on purpose now. I did not know that. All right. Yes, I will not be in the Nip, but I will be in the Nip. at the Gilded Balloon.
Sometimes interviews have a messy ending as well.
Yeah, it just everything kind of falls apart at the end. It's the writing style that I love.
Rebecca, thanks for your time.
Thank you so much.
Rebecca McGlynn there, and the show Asexuality. I say the show, it's a musical taking place at the Gilded Balloon Patter House, 11 p.m. It's one of your nice late night sing-alongs through to the 27th. As always, link, like, love, share, subscribe, leave some star ratings for us, or just enjoy your time with myself, Hugh and Spence, and the Edinburgh Fringe on the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. There will be more coming up if you're just new to the podcast because you found us. Well, those previous ones in the feed were here weekdays throughout the Fringe. So you've got a whole Fringe back catalogue to explore while you explore the Fringe catalogue itself in Edinburgh going forward. Enjoy your weekend. I'll be back here on Monday. You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.